power on.
The following is a presentation of the Sovereign Technica podcast feed. Legendary films and TV shows. Or just pure shit. The legendary host, Dr. Brian Sovereign. Sovereign at the movies.
It was a dark and stormy night. Wait, is that how the movie started? No, but this is Sovereign at the Movies, baby, and it is a dark and stormy night, and I'll take it. Woo, to cool this baby down, even though, you know, it's like Planet Zero. It's always cool. Or at least I try to be. I try. I'm not saying I succeed all the time, but I try. What we have here for you in this special Sovereign at the Movies is something, frankly, I never thought I'd be talking about. And I mean that. You know, 15 years ago, actually 15 years ago was a fucking surprise to me. Okay, but 15 years ago, when the last original content, and of course, it's a movie / miniseries, direct-to-video, okay, very similar to what we're going to talk about. That being Babylon 5, Lost Tales, okay? You know, I thought that was the end, even though at the time, and I want to check some expectations here with what we just got, even though at the time, we were told that if this did well, you know, if the Lost Tales had done well, that Straczynski, J. Michael Straczynski, creator of Babylon 5, and also the writer of the previous films and most of the television series, and yes, there are previous films to Babylon 5, though many people might not know that. Very convoluted. Watching Babylon 5 can be a very convoluted thing if you don't. There's an order to follow. I used to actually keep it up on my website, the best way to watch Babylon 5. But anyway, but he had told us with the Lost Tales that we would get more. Now, whatever the fuck happened there, who knows? You know, did it not sell well? Were the reviews not right? I'm not entirely certain what occurred there with the Lost Tales, but we never got any more of them. As great as the Lost Tales was, particularly in 2007, and I mean, it truly was, even brought in characters from Crusade. I mean, just dynamite stuff. But that was 15 years ago. Over 15 years ago now, I suppose. And what we have that came out just about a month ago, that'd be August 15th, I believe was the official date of release, August 15th, 2023, even though some people at Comic-Con got to see it early, we got Babylon 5, The Road Home. An animated film, CGI animation, to be clear, but an animated film, but again, animated or otherwise, I never expected to see more Babylon 5, at least within the original universe that we know, which is what I've always been appealing for. Now, I'm going to get into more of that history here in a minute, but I have now watched Babylon 5, The Road Home, multiple times, and now I got to tell you, before I even watched, okay, understand this, before I even watched Babylon 5, The Road Home, now you know how much I love Babylon 5, and there was no way, like I was going to nitpick this movie so hard. and I wanted to make sure I was getting in every detail. Now, before we get into that review, let me tell you a little bit of my review process, okay? Normally, what I would do is I consume, I don't know, 5 cups of coffee before I get into anything that requires, you know, some heavier research or something. Not that this wouldn't be a joy, right? Because, you know, it's Babylon 5. So normally I would, you know, that's what I would do. So that way my brain is so on. But like I've been telling you lately, gotta back off of the coffee. Gotta slow down on that. Okay. Now, another thing that I've talked about over the years. In fact, some people might remember I did a lot of little personal experimentation. I called it the Hyde Initiative, as an Hyde, you know, like Jekyll and Hyde. Yes, it's pronounced Jekyll. And I used to, I was taking so many supplements, you know, like ashwagandha and a lot of, mushroom compounds and all these other things. And the thing was, is that it kind of, A, it was expensive. B, it took forever, you know, for me to take all of these. Because I can't really swallow pills, right? So I, you know, have to do it when I'm eating food. This is very specific times during the day, but I like to break it up a little bit and just, it wasn't happening. Fortunately, I found this amazing thing, okay? And it falls under the category that I get asked a lot about, that being nootropics. And nootropics, or nootropics, depending upon how we used to say nootropics back in the day, but you know, I know a lot of people pronounce it as nootropics now. But nootropics, you know, that's something I'm always keeping an eye on. And I heard about one called Magic Mind, and I was like, okay, we'll give this a shot. Got to lay off the coffee, but I need the energy, need the focus, right? And that's really all I need. It's not like my brain, I expect, you know, I mean, it's me. It's not like I'm expecting my brain to, you know, somehow operates so much better, be mind expanding or, you know, all of these things. I just want to be able to focus, have a better thought process, more efficient thought process. And that's a big reason, many reasons that, you know, like I look at a lot of, you know, mushroom compounds and other things. And well, Magic Mind turns out that this has so much of, you know, what I used to do in my own little personal a supplement, you know, stack, you know, as far as with the Hyde Initiative, it's all right there. And even better, it's a drink. It's a little drink. And so, you know, I don't even have to worry about taking it with, you know, necessarily taking it with food or whatever. Like, you know, it's when I need it, open up a bottle, drink it, boom, done. And away you go. Ashwagandha's in there. Lion's mane has turmeric, right? I mean, I still put tons of turmeric on my toast, but can you get enough? I don't know. Just antioxidants all over the place. I love it. Did it work? Well, I mean, maybe Babylon 5, you know, The Road Home was just that great of a movie. We'll talk about that. Or boy, I mean, Magic Mind was really letting me focus on that baby. And to be fair, you know, I'd been taking it for about a week. I mean, I love it because, again, I'm not getting, you know, everybody always talks about the coffee crash, right? I mean, and believe me, I know, especially when you're pounding back 5 or so cups a day and you're no longer doing that. Want to talk about a crash. The nice thing is I feel like I get the same benefit. I get the same focus that I want, same, a little bit, you know, kind of increase in creativity. You know, but the main thing is just that throughput of thought that it increases. I get that. And, you know, no crash, right? None of those issues. I love it. So just so it turns out, I love it so much that I'd love it if you guys tried it out. You guys, gals, and Z's, if you want to go to, in fact, there's a link in the show notes, but I'll spell it out for you right here. Okay. If you go to magicmind.com/sovereigntechnica. Okay. So it's SOVRYN technica. So go to magicmind.com/sovereigntechnica. And got you an even better deal here, 56% off your subscription if you use the code SOVEREIGN20, okay? Got to do this within the next 10 days. You're hearing this, SOVEREIGN20, SOVRYN20, SOVEREIGN20. So magicmind.com/sovereigntechnica. Use that code to let them know you heard about it from me. And I think you're going to be really pleased with the results, especially if you're like me and you're really trying to get off of that coffee. You're going to love it. Now, what I do want you to get on is the new movie, 2023, Babylon 5, The Road Home. And I got a full review here for you. Let's dive in. And, you know, to cover some of the history that I mentioned at the top. Now, I had said that, you know, I didn't expect to see anything in the original universe and that's what I was pulling for. Okay, let's give that touch of history here. And I've talked about some of this on my show in the past. We've known those who follow Straczynski. We've known that he has had two Babylon 5 projects in the works for some years. Okay. There was Project A and Project B. Project A, I forget which exactly was which, but Project A, we'll say, or maybe it was Project B, whatever, we'll say Project A. Project A was the remake that has made the news over the past couple of years. Okay. The full-on remake, it's not continuing in the original universe. Again, it is a genuine remake, new story, all that jazz. Okay. This is the thing I was not excited for. Why? Because, well, there are many reasons that I'm not, there's not just one. One of the reasons is admittedly, on my part, a very personal one, and this is part of the reason I think actually a lot of people really don't like remakes, is that when you find somebody else, you know, when you're into Babylon 5, like I am, and you know, if, look, if you don't know what Babylon 5 is, okay, and you're, I have a hard time believing anyone who's in my audience doesn't know what Babylon 5 is. Why? Because for over 10 years, I've run an ad in my show for Babylon 5 since episode one or so, about, around there. I've been, you know, and we're thousands of episodes deep. I've been running ads for Babylon for people just, you know, they're not paying me or anything. I just want people to be into this fucking show so bad because I think it's the greatest show ever. You know, when I showed it to Ellen, you know, my wife, the most discerning of critics, and she truly is. Okay. If there's a flaw, if there's a problem, she will put a sword through that shit so fast. Woo, they're falling down. You know, and I had said in my ads for years, everybody has heard it. You know the deal. It's the greatest show in television history. Does Ellen agree with that? Yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, she even said we've been going through through the Stargate franchise recently, getting close to finishing. And she basically said, when can we go back to watching Babylon? Like, can we watch Babylon 5 all over again? And I was like, oh, well, fuck yeah, we can. And of course, it'll be great timing to do so. Why? Because in December of 2023, we're going to be getting the other impossible thing. You know, the long road, this new animated movie, it feels impossible to me. The other impossible thing that's happening is we are getting Babylon 5 on Blu-ray in true 1080p. More details to be hammered out about that, but you better believe I'm going to be doing a review. I'm going to be talking about it and going to be giving you updates as that comes along. Why? Because I fucking love Babylon 5. Now here's the deal. Okay. The reason I wasn't excited for the remake and why I think a lot of people aren't excited about remakes is because when you find somebody else who is so hot and heavy, who's so sweaty about something that you're into, whatever it may be, Star Wars, fucking, you know, Star Trek, VR5, take your pick. Of whatever, or the works of Olaf Stapledon or something, whatever it happens to be. When you find that person, okay, you get excited because you have an instantaneous, almost secret language between each other. And as a species, humanity does enjoy its secrets. Doesn't like being left out of them, but it likes being included in them. And when you have that instantaneous language where you can quote lines to each other and you can talk about all the great scenes and everything, it's a very special connection. It really is. This is why science fiction conventions have been wildly popular for decades, right? Because you get to share that connection. Here's the problem, right? Is that you could run into somebody, and this is probably mostly true in the, I would argue, in the Battlestar Galactica community. You run into people who say, oh yeah, I'm a Galactica fan. And they don't have a fucking clue who Dirk Benedict is. They don't have a fucking clue who Lauren Green is. You know, they didn't know that Adama was Jewish, for fuck's sake. You know what I mean? And right on. Saying that as a little Jewish boy myself. Not so little, but you get my point. It sucks when there's the possibility that you could be talking about two completely different things. Right? This is why Christian denominations don't communicate with each other that much. So, And it's frustrating. And that's part of the reason I don't need a remake. No, because there's nothing wrong with the original. And without question, most people have not seen Babylon 5, unfortunately, on this planet, as hard as I've tried to change that. And I know I've gotten thousands of people to watch, of new people to watch it, but there's still billions left. Like, there's no need for new when the old can still be so picked apart and okay, well, we want to continue the story. Well, then, you know, if we can get an animated movie, let's do more novels. Let's do this. Let's do that. You know, it's, I think people just get disenfranchised, ironically, with the term franchise. They get disenfranchised when, you know, like they're talking to some young person, and that's even better when you get to cross generations, right? When you're talking to some young person, and they're like, oh yeah, I love Babylon 5. And they're talking about something that might as well be, you know, Greek to the Hebrew. and it's a mess. Just like with Battlestar Galactica. Yeah, I watched the whole thing of the new BSG. Doesn't mean shit to me. I think it's terrible. You know, and it didn't stick the landing. Ugh, Babylon 5, can that stick the landing? Bet your goddamned ass. Stuck the landing better than anybody else around. But it didn't stick the landing. And I told everybody, this isn't going to stick the landing. They don't have a plan. They don't know what the hell they're doing. They're making it up as they go along. This isn't going to work. And it didn't work. You know, as to where I think the original Battlestar Galactica series is fucking timeless. Really is. So all of this, to get to the point, I'm not mad about it. Okay. I'm just saying this is part of the reason I don't get excited about remakes. Okay. Because yeah, I want to connect with people on this stuff too. But when you create entire new, you know, canons and entirely new continuities, it makes that communication, it fucks with that connection, right? To say nothing of the fact that when I go and search on, you know, whatever search engine online, you know, you could end up with two completely different things that you're just trying to look for a picture of, I don't know, with the original Galactica or something or whatever. And I mean, this is a minor annoyance on the grand scheme. There's other problems with remakes. I mean, Straczynski obviously can do whatever the hell he wants. Okay. And he's the creator, so he can call the shot. If he wants to do a remake, go for it. Okay. I've said that many times. That's fine. But it doesn't excite me because I know those characters that I grew up with, that I feel like I live with almost every day. I mean, I look right in front of me. Here I am behind the microphone. I look right in front of me and there's a fucking Ranger pin, a Ranger symbol right in front of me. I mean, like the background on my computer is the Babylon 5 station from The Road Home, actually, and it's gorgeous. I look to my right. There's a little white star. I look to my left. There's a gift from, you know, my best friend that has a gigantic Babylon 5 sword and shield logo. You got to grok me, okay? Like, this isn't nostalgia, all right? I've always told you, nostalgia is when it's something that you've left behind and you think fondly upon it. I've never left this stuff behind. I still watch Babylon 5 regularly. I probably get a run through in every 2-3 years, you know, complete rewatch. It's still with me. So it's not nostalgia. Okay. And you know, it's still with me because all these characters still have more stories to tell and they don't need to be remade to be able to do that. They just need to be told. So that's another, that might be the primary reason that I'm not a fan of most remakes. Now a concession to be made, and this is going to play into The Road Home. We're going to get into the full review here. A concession to be made in this is I do like the Kelvin timeline for Star Trek. I don't like Discovery and everything after that. Everything on Paramount Plus is shit. I don't like that. Okay. But I did like what J.J. Abrams did. I think Into Darkness is a wildly underrated film. I think Star Trek Beyond is some of the best Star Trek we had had in a very long time. I think the 2009 Star Trek is a very exciting film. Great setup. The comic books that IDW did that took place after, more or less after Star Trek Beyond, because it was before the 1701A was finished at the end of Beyond. Okay. But it was that in between moments of the last few seconds of the movie. The comic book was comic book of the year for me back in 2016. It was genius. Like, it was so fucking well done. So engaging. Star Trek comics right now, actually in 2023, are some of the hottest tickets going too. Not anything related to Picard or Discovery or Strange New Worlds. No, I'm talking about the main lines. Great stuff happening there with the God Killers, all that dynamite. Okay. Anyway, so go check those out if you haven't. Now, so I like the Kelvin timeline. Now, why do I like the Kelvin timeline? Here I am saying it's like, oh, you know, you're talking about two different Star Treks, talking about this. Yeah, but you're not talking about two different Star Treks when you talk about the Kelvin timeline and the Prime timeline. You're not, because what's the adjoining factor? Leonard Nimoy as Spock. Okay. The Kelvin timeline exists within the continuity. The continuity of the Prime timeline still exists within the Kelvin timeline. For me, Star Trek ended with Star Trek Beyond. You know, like that was it in 2016. Everything after that's crap. That's for me. Now, I know there's a lot of people who don't like the Kelvin timeline either. No, I thought those were very well done. So I'm really not against remakes so much, right? It's just you want to make it, maybe this is the most important point, you want to make it so that the people who have been fans for however many decades don't feel like they wasted their time the past few decades integrating and watching and, you know, and everything and taking in your creation, your franchise. Because that's what most remakes do, is they just completely say, ah, fuck everything that came before, it all sucked. Right? And yes, that was the attitude of a lot of people that made Battlestar Galactica in 2005. Was that the original Battlestar Galactica sucked, or was corny or cheesy or whatever. Fuck them. That show was A, way ahead of its time. B, had incredible ideas that no other science fiction has ever really even bothered to try and touch. Not talking about Galactica 1980 here. Talking about the goods. 78. Anyway. So Babylon 5, The Road Home. Now, like I said, that idea about remakes and about, but as long as they're connected to the continuity being acceptable to me, well, we're going to get into that. Okay. So here we go. Spoilers ahead. All right. And we're going to talk it up. So Babylon 5, The Road Home. I had mentioned earlier about Project A and Project B. Okay. Project A was the remake. We just got done talking about remakes and the problems with remakes. Project B was a thing that we had heard about a few years ago, we'll say, and there was inclination that the original cast was involved. Straczynski was with the original cast. Original cast was talking to each other for some reason, and we didn't know what was going on, what Project B would be. And come to find out, the Road Home is what Project B was meant to be. So all of this was done, like a lot of the recording and everything done by the original cast, and the original cast is involved, at least the ones that are still with us. You know, they're recording on this, and of course that already gives it major props, you know, to have the original actors involved as much as they possibly can be. Okay. Unfortunately, Babylon 5, unlike say Star Trek, where it seemed like the original series actors just lived forever. You know, the first one to go, was DeForest Kelly the first one, or was it James Doohan? But I mean, these guys lived into their 80s and whatever. And, you know, William Shatner's still, he's not just alive. Like, he's alive. Yeah, it's really remarkable in his 90s. But anyway, unfortunately, the Babylon 5 cast, or at least a good chunk of it, was not so fortunate to still be with us. So, and I get that that's part of the reason why remakes would seem to be more tenable, because, you know, you don't have the original cast to continue the story. But as I had said, when the Babylon 5 remake got announced, I said, no, there's no reason for this. And why aren't they just doing animated movies? And you can bring in other voice actors who could sound very much like the characters and so on, or, you know, do comic books, do novels, whatever. You don't have to do a remake. I get it that the cast is gone and you don't want to shit on them, or you don't want to disrespect them in any way. I respect that choice, that idea. But there's other ways to do things while still respecting the memory and the talents of, you know, of those who came before. And I think an animated movie is a nice compromise, shall we say, in that regard. And that's what we ended up getting. But so this has been in the works for a while. This didn't just come out of nowhere. It is billed as part of the celebration for the centenarian celebration for Warner Brothers, 100 years of Warner Brothers. If you go into any retail store or online, and if you buy any physical discs, you will see on it, it'll have Warner Brothers 100, if it's a Warner Brothers property. You know, that's a very popular thing right now. And, you know, it's to help celebrate it and everything. And great. Okay. This did come out on physical on August 15th, as well as digital. 4K, Blu-ray, DVD, the whole thing. I, of course, got it on Blu-ray, as I am a physical collector, though I think 4K is bullshit. I've already talked about that many times. But Blu-ray 1080p, you got me. And I mean, let's just say this right out front. As far as look, does this warrant the 1080p? Does this warrant, you know, the high definition release? Oh, fucking yeah. The animation on this is stunning. Absolutely stunning. And the Babylon 5 station in particular, in my opinion, has never looked more beautiful. And there have been some interesting updates to certain models of things. For example, White Star looks a little different. Some of the Shadow Cruisers look very different, almost kind of odd. And I've heard opinions on both sides about how they look. And we'll certainly get into that a little bit. But again, this is Project B. It has finally come out. And this is another one where, like the Lost Tales we were talking about earlier, if it's successful enough, and I don't want to tell you how many copies I've bought to try and make sure of this fact, if it's successful enough, and I did that sight unseen, by the way, if it's successful enough, there will be more. Now, is there a setup for more? Yes. And you're going to want to stick around to hear more about that. But let's break down The Road Home by the numbers here. So it is, you know, basically written, the screenplay entirely is by J. Michael Straczynski. It is directed by Matt Peters. The producer, Rick Morales, on the Blu-ray that we just mentioned, there is a commentary track, which is part of the reason I buy physical discs. There is a commentary track with Bruce Boxleitner, who during the commentary track, it's the first time he had ever seen the entire film completed. Of course, he is returning as John Sheridan, President John Sheridan of the Interstellar Alliance at the time, because this picks up really right at the kind of right at the end of season 5, but before Sleeping in Light, before the final episode. Okay. So it's got a nice midway point there. And if you were to watch this chronologically, yes, I think you would watch this before Sleeping in Light. So you'd watch, was it Objects at Rest? Is that the penultimate episode of Babylon 5, as in the last one before the last one? You would watch Objects at Rest, and then you would watch The Road Home, and then you'd watch Sleeping in Light. Sometimes watching the movies can be confusing, because like Third Space came out after the show was almost pretty much done, you know, with season 5, but the movie takes place towards the end of season 4. So it can be confusing where to watch some of these things if you're trying to do it chronologically. But this is a movie that's all about chronology. Anyway, you had a great team involved with Warner Brothers Animation. And you can see the talent, like I said, in the animation. It is an absolutely stunning film. Very well done. Has a little bit of an anime touch to it. And I think that works. Like, I'm totally okay with that. Now, as far as who else is returning here. Again, we got writing by Straczynski. The direction job by Matt Peters is great. In fact, you learn while you're listening to the audio commentary, because of Straczynski's tremendous history in some of the most important animated works of all time, including He-Man, that he knew how to write the screenplay. He knew how to write it for a director for an animated film, meaning he knows to add in, okay, and the characters should look like this and should do this. You know, it's not just a traditional screenplay. So I think that lent itself to why this looks so natural in animation. And that's because Straczynski knows how to write a full-on screenplay, not just a great story, but a full-on screenplay for animation. Now, We'll talk about the audio commentary here and there. It's not the greatest audio commentary that I've ever heard, to be honest. And maybe nothing will ever beat the audio commentary for Conan the Barbarian with Arnold Schwarzenegger and John Milius, the director. That's just a fucking classic. but you still learn things, and we will certainly talk about them as we go along. As far as who's returned, of course, like I said, Bruce Boxleitner is back as Sheridan. We have Claudia Christian back kicking ass, as Susan Ivanova. We have Peter Jurasik, who is back as the one and only Londa Mollari. Bill Mumy is back reprising his role as Lanier, as the Minbari Lanier. And in fact, there's some great funny jokes about Bill Mumy throughout the thing and Lost in Space, or I'm sorry, the Lost in the Word We Cannot Say. You'll have to watch the movie to kind of get that one. But I love some of the fourth wall humor in this. I'm a big fan of fourth wall jokes. Really am. Ever since I was a kid, and I remember watching The Happiest Millionaire with Fred McMurray, and the way that Tommy Steele would always like break the fourth wall in that with his Irish accent, man, it just had you hooked. Anyway, Tracy Scoggins, of course, is back as well as I was going to say Kat from Lois and Clark, but no, she was phenomenal as Captain Lockley. She is back, and a personal favorite, Patricia Tallman, coming back as Lita Alexander. Everybody I just listed off, none of them have played these characters in at least 15 years, if not more, if not 20, but I don't think they skipped a beat. And apparently Peter Jurasik, he came out and said that, I don't know if I can do this voice anymore, but man, you didn't notice if he couldn't do the voice. It was phenomenal. Now we do have, again, unfortunately we do have absent friends. We've lost some of the top talents, and both in front of the camera and behind the camera. And I got to admit, I kind of wish. So all of these people who were like, for example, Andreas Katsoulis, Jerry Doyle, and so on. These are people who have passed on. They do all get a mention at the end of the credits. I think it might not have been Straczynski's call, but I know I get the sense that he's a sentimental guy. And so he probably wanted to do it for some reason. It didn't, but man, when they're listing off, the people who are no longer with us, some of the people behind the camera should have been mentioned as well. There should have been mention of Douglas Netter. As I understand it, John Iacobelli is no longer with us. There's quite a few people who were names that you saw constantly in the, after the opening credits, should have been mentioned. Harlan should have been mentioned, yes, who's creative consultant, but he should have been mentioned. I don't know what there might've been some politics or decisions there. Credits can only be so long. I don't know, but I would have liked to have seen the names of those that went beyond the rim who were behind the camera as well. But regardless, we do have some voice talent taking place of those that are no longer with us. And so there was Paul Guyette as Zathras, as well as Zathras and Zathras and Zathras. I imagine he played all of the Zathri. Is that what I call him? Zathri? Yeah, all right, that's good. Yeah, okay, so Zathri. Paul Guyette also played Jeffrey Sinclair. And yes, we did get Sinclair in this. Why? Because this is a movie about multiverses. We'll talk about that in just a moment. And I thought Paul Guyette did a fine job. Just, again, we're going by the numbers here. Did a fine job as Sinclair. Michael O'Hare, irreplaceable. Of course, tragic story there, but irreplaceable. When I started watching Babylon 5, when The Gathering first premiered on Fox on a Monday night back in 93, so I've been along the ride since Sinclair was the man. Sheridan wasn't even an idea or wasn't a part of the picture yet anyway. So it's really cool to have Jeffrey Sinclair in this. I'll certainly say that. Anthony Hansen did the voice for Michael Garibaldi. This is the person, Anthony Hansen. I'm not familiar with his other work, but this is the guy. He sounded exactly like Jerry Doyle. Incredible. And we didn't get a whole lot of him, unfortunately, but I was blown away at how, because I think Jerry Doyle had a very unique voice. I mean, it's part of the reason that Jerry Doyle was able, I think, to translate well to, you know, the industry that I had been in, that being radio. And it's because, you know, he just had a great, he had that great, part of it was because, I mean, he also had a, you know, great mind, or, you know, good mind on his head, but he also had that, that very unique voice. And I can't believe Anthony Hansen was able to emulate that. And he did a phenomenal job. And we also had Phil LaMarr. Anytime Phil LaMarr gets work, I am happy. Phil LaMarr is probably most famous for Mad TV. Very funny guy. But he's playing Dr. Franklin. I don't want to say he sounded like Dr. Franklin exactly, but because it's Phil LaMarr, and because Phil LaMarr is the real fucking deal, meaning he is a nerd of nerds, okay, which, you know, I always think of him fondly for being in Free Enterprise, you know, the movie by Bobby Burnett and Mark Altman. So I was just happy to have him in there, you know, and he deserves to be in any science fiction franchise that'll have him. So for him to be a part of the Babylon 5 lineage now, dynamite. But I think he did great as Dr. Franklin anyway, even though, and this is kind of odd, when you first get introduced to Dr. Franklin in the future, he calls them Pachmara. And I was like, well, maybe Phil just got that wrong, you know, which is kind of odd. Cause like I said, Phil LaMarr really knows his shit. I mean, he is a true nerd. But then in the audio commentary, Straczynski says Pachmara. Now I'm not going to debate Straczynski, but I know they called them the Pachmara. So, I mean, I guess it's tomato, tomato. I don't know. It was just, it came off very weird. And I think those are details you want to pay attention to, especially when you're bringing in kind of old fans back in, because like even just little tones like that of the way that words are pronounced, you know, that sinks people back in even unconsciously. Right. I think a lot of people can remember the fucking train wreck of, was it Syfy? And that should be pronounced Syfy, not Sci-Fi. It was the Sci-Fi channel in the 90s. It's fucking Syfy now. It has nothing to do with Sci-Fi. But they do their like stupid retrospectives on YouTube, and like they couldn't pronounce Delenn's name. And it was like, it was so clear that the person reading the script, the gal they had reading the script, had no idea. She'd never seen Babylon 5, whatever. And I mean, I know that's commonplace in the entertainment industry, but nobody's going to take you seriously, you know, when you're not even going to pronounce the names right. And this is a small thing. And like I said, it could be tomato, tomato, but it came off as kind of weird. Very small nitpick, but it's there. Peter Michael as David Sheridan, and as well as Marcus Cole. David Sheridan, of course, being John Sheridan's father, who was originally played by the father of, well, the one and only Ron Howard, of course. And, you know, it was nice to have Marcus in, even though he was just there for a second, but it was pretty cool to have Marcus there. I dug that. Then Rebecca Reedy as Delenn, I thought did a fantastic job. Mira Furlan is a very tough act to follow. But I think that Rebecca Reedy did the job. But then we got to get into maybe the most important voice of the bunch, because while it's always hard to say, you know, when you have a saga as great as Babylon 5 is, it's always hard to say who's your favorite character, right? You know, that can be a real challenge. Like when I think of Star Wars, like who's my favorite character in Star Wars? Well, it's actually Grand Admiral Thrawn. And that's before he's made his appearance on Ahsoka, and long before he ever made an appearance on Rebels or anything related to Disney owned Star Wars. But you know, it's like on another day, you know, I could say, no, Emperor Palpatine's my favorite, or you kind of go down the list, right? Or Mara Jade or whatever, or, you know, or Princess Leia or something, whatever, you know, you can take your pick. Like there's so many great characters to choose from. You really don't even have to choose one. But for a lot of people, and myself included, you know, Sinclair was my favorite for quite some time. But Jakar is really the character that I feel like I can relate to the most, and just the character that is just so inspirational, so epic, in so many ways, and so funny even too. Oh man. And let's be honest. I mean, just the gravitas that Andreas Katsoulis brought to the character, Jakar is downright sexy. I mean, that's a fact of life. Okay. And so unfortunately, Andreas Katsoulis is no longer with us and has been with us for a while. I'm glad that he would get his opportunity much through other franchises, including Star Trek and whatever else. But anyway, Babylon 5, I think, will probably be what he's best known for, because of the epicness of the character of Jakar. And so you can't just bring in anybody to fill in the shoes, or at least try to lace them a little bit anyway, of an actor like that, and for a character like Jakar. Now, the guy they brought in, Andrew Morgado, is not new to the world of voice acting by any stretch of the imagination. Andrew Morgado is a tremendous talent, been involved with countless video games, many films, lots of animated works. Okay, this guy is a top-notch voice actor, and I will not take anything away from him on that. However, the overall treatment of Jakar in this movie might be kind of if I were to give a negative in this film, it might be one of the very few, if the only, kind of negative. It's just not there. And it's not just Andrew Morgado's voice. And I get it. Straczynski talks about it during the audio commentary for The Road Home. You know, and he says, you don't want somebody who sounds exactly like them. And I still haven't been presented with a great reason as to why, because again, part of what made Garibaldi work so well in this movie was the fact that Anthony Hansen sounded fucking exactly like Garibaldi. Like, it's almost creepy. And I say that in a good way. I don't feel like Andrew Morgado got the spirit of Jakar, and honestly, the animators didn't get it either. And I think there's a reason for that, because the major difference, like Jakar's, outfit, you know, looks great in animation, but his head is small. And I think they needed to do that just so that you could see him, like his neck seems small, just so you could kind of like see him turn his head and give the animated character some more, you know, because unless you're doing it in animation, unless you're doing a close up on the eyes, right, it's very difficult to have an animated character act with their eyes, as to where one of the powers that Andreas Katsoulis brought to the role of Jakar. And it helped that Jakar had red eyes, or eventually red and a blue, but you get my point, was that he said so much with his eyes, you know, or even with his grin. And those can be, unless you're really getting an up close shot, those can be difficult to translate in animation. So you have to have some direction where the head moves more, as to where I feel like in the show Babylon 5, Jakar's head honestly barely moved. It was more his whole body moved, which was part of his, I dare say, is almost his grandioseness, right? And so the fact that Jakar has this, it almost looks like a little neck. And it's like little, or it's thin and it's long. It just doesn't look right. Like, the character doesn't seem to have, believe it or not, doesn't seem to have the same strength. I mean, you think of like wrestlers, you know, like Bill Goldberg or Kurt Angle, right? Where they had these gigantic necks. Like, it really gave them presence. And not saying Andreas Katsoulis had a huge neck, but with the Narn prosthetics on, I think it gave him that look, and his outfit gave him that look, and it just gave him a power. And that power's kind of missing, and he just ends up looking sort of strange from the neck up in The Road Home. And add on to that I don't think Andrew Morgado's voice delivered for the character. It was too soft. That was a little disappointing. Fortunately, I mean, in one sense, Jakar plays a pivotal role, or at least the visage of Jakar for sure plays a pivotal role in this. In another sense, he's not like the centrality of the story. And so, you know, like Andrew Murgado's voice, like it doesn't have to do as much, in my opinion. Okay. But that was disappointing. Otherwise, like I said, everybody is really on their A game. And you're getting, you know, and speaking of other characters, while we're listing off cast returning, again, this is a story about multiverses. You know, Sheridan ends up in an accident in a ceremony of a new power plant getting turned on Minbar, you know, and it's kind of one of his first acts as president of the Interstellar Alliance. And it all goes awry, you know, and he ends up getting unstuck in time again. And so he's going to these alternate universes where, you know, all kinds of shit has happened, where say the Earth Alliance never encountered the Shadows, or the Shadows won the war, or at least humanity lost the war. You know, and there's a great moment where, where Straczynski writes in, "Let's hurtle the moon at the Earth." And it's awesome. It's very, very, very big and very well done. So, you know, now just to say, like, the storyline, okay, before we get into the other characters, the storyline really quickly, the multiverse thing is just so fucking overdone. Disney is effectively ruined, both in science fiction and in science fact, has ruined the concept of the multiverse. I mean, they really have. Like, they've completely poisoned that well. And honestly, like any scientist that espouses the idea of the multiverse should just wear Disney ears. You know, wear the Mickey Mouse ears and look like the joke that they are. I mean, I've already done episodes debunking this whole concept, but regardless, what nonsense. but, you know, because it's Straczynski, and because he kind of makes it like a larger point, like this idea of, you know, the observer effect and everything, he gets into that. You know, he's making a larger point with quantum physics. I give it a little bit of a pass. Also, again, like I told you earlier, this project has been worked on for years. And so it started getting worked on before, in my opinion, before the well was poisoned. Okay, so I'm going to give it a pass as to where otherwise I am completely sick of the multiverse concept. Not to say it was a bad concept creatively in the past, like the one with Jet Li was fantastic. We could go down a list of, I mean, or, you know, even like with Star Trek with the mirror universe before Discovery wrecked that bullshit. You know, like it's a great science fiction, or it's a great storytelling tool. But it's become a tool, and not in the literal sense. It's become a tool in the pejorative sense, because now it's just a cheap money-making scheme. And someone might want to argue that that's what's going on here with Babylon 5. I'm going to say not, and I'll get into why I'm kind of excited about this. But I've certainly heard from people who I respect who are like, "Oh no, don't do that, don't do that." Well, what are they going to do? Again, we'll get into it. So we get the opportunity to experience a lot more characters in this. That perhaps we wouldn't have originally. And boy, there are some fucking moments that are, I want posters on my wall. In fact, there's one moment in particular that I wanted a poster on my wall. And hilariously enough, Straczynski says during the audio commentary, when that moment happens, he says, "There's your poster, folks." And I was like, yeah, exactly. But it's a moment where Sinclair is handing a rifle to Sheridan, and they both like kind of grip it at the same time and are just looking straight at each other. It's just a epic shot. Really great. Okay. But other characters that we got to see, like I mentioned, Marcus Cole, you do get a return of him. You know, there are characters that you don't get to see, and I think that's worth mentioning. You don't really get Tally Winters, which I get it. She wasn't originally supposed to be a part of the program anyway, but it was kind of weird to not have her. There is a scene, okay, where they're on the Great Machine on Epsilon, where they look on the screen and they're seeing what appears to be like a bunch of other universes. And like you see Kosh in it, and you see a bunch of other little Easter egg moments. I don't think there's anything like secretive in there, but I haven't looked at all of those shots yet, like, and gotten the real zoom in and everything. But maybe Talia's in that. There was a point where there's a security guard and I was hoping that that was Zach. And of course, you know, Zach, the actor that played Zach, is one of the people that's no longer with us. Rest in peace, Kinnicky. And the other that I was, and I'm kind of going to believe that it was him, but it also apparently was not. But there is a kind of a lead Star Fury pilot during one of the battles with the shadow in this, with the shadows in this. And I was really thinking like, oh, is that Lieutenant Keffer? That's so cool. Apparently it's not. In the audio commentary, Straczynski very clearly says that this guy, the Star Fury pilot, gets Keffered. And that's what he, whenever a pilot dies, that's what he calls it, getting Keffered. But he didn't say it was Keffer, and it is just listed as Star Fury pilot. But I'm going to like to believe that it's Lieutenant Keffer from season two of Babylon 5. But that's another character you don't get. Kosh, I mean, you do get some Vorlon action in this, but you don't really see the Vorlons at all, which would have been very interesting. As far as other characters, I mean, like Morden, you don't really get to experience Morden. There's some debate as to whether or not you get to experience Anna Sheridan on Zahadum, or Zahaboom, as it gets called at one point, hilariously. Yeah, so, you know, and having Zathras, whatever, I mean, you get a lot of characters in this. But yes, there are major characters who are not there. Veer is not there at all. You don't get Natoth in any way. There's quite a few missing, even though they might be on that little screen at the Great Machine. You do get to see a lot of the Great Machine. That was awesome. You get to see an ass ton of Zathras's. That was awesome. Zathras as a character is fucking hilarious, in my opinion, in the film. I know some people have complained about Straczynski's very corny style of humor. I love it. I think it's hilarious. Pretty much every joke landed for me. Lockley, I don't know if I mentioned this, or I had said all the actors who came back were doing great, but really Tracy Scoggins was doing great, and it's really cool that we could get more of Lockley, because that's a character. One of the reasons I was excited about the Lost Tales was that you got more of that character, so that her presence in season 5 has a lot more meaning, right? This is akin to what's happening these days in Star Wars, where you have Mon Mothma, leader of the rebellion, the antithesis of the Emperor, right? You know, we didn't know much about her. She just shows up in Return of the Jedi, and that's kind of it. It's all very short and whatever. And unless you read like the Timothy Zahn novels or other parts of the old EU, you didn't really get to know a whole lot about her. Now she's becoming one of the best characters in Star Wars history because of Andor and even Ahsoka and other shows where she's delivering the goods. And I feel like we could get the same thing with Lockley, you know, with these continue expanded stories. So I'm always glad that she gets included in these things, even though a lot of people are a lot of fans. I remember back in the 90s, a lot of fans were just wanting like, wait, who's this Lockley character? We want Claudia Christian back. We want Ivanova. But it's really cool to have them both in this actually. And so let's talk a little bit about the story, and then, you know, we can kind of start to wrap things up. Oh, let me bring up the music. The music I thought really worked. Look, we're not going to get Christopher Franke. You know, like we knew that. But I thought the music really worked on this. And to get into some of the animation changes, like suddenly we get to see the shadows actually fighting. Okay. Throughout this, again, you're traveling to multiple universes here. So some things can be a little different because it's another universe, but then there's other things where it's like, wait a minute, because it seems as Sheridan is jumping, he's getting farther and farther away from his own timeline. Okay. But at first it would appear he's within his own timeline through, you know, within history that he himself experienced. The shadows, while in one sense, it's really cool to see them in action, like in fighting action, and their shields that can also repel energy attacks and like send it right back at the attacker. Like all of that is a cool idea. I feel like this is, I mean, and hey, Straczynski can call his shot, so I'm not going to argue about it too much. But I feel like this is a very different presentation than what we got of the shadows in the TV series, because those shadows were effectively, they fit their name. They were always in the shadows. They had other people do their dirty work, whether it's the Centauri, the Drak, the, you know, take your pick of the species, or even humans, right? With their, you know, destroyers that have shadow technology and everything. You know, they always had other people do, they were always behind the scenes. You never saw them in direct action. In one sense, it's cool to see them in direct action. In another, it feels very out of character for them. But that's a minor quibble. I'm not going to, you know, go crazy about that. Because again, Straczynski, it's his baby. And if he wants to say that, no, the shadows like absolutely will come and invade, then so be it. And you do get to experience moments that were, you know, I mean, this is the other reason why I don't mind the multiverse story, because throughout Babylon 5's run, throughout the TV series, throughout that story, there are multiple occasions where we experienced alternate futures and alternate histories. And a couple of those, I mean, some of those you get to see in this film, you know, like when Ivanova famously is, you know, the station's under attack. You don't exactly know by who, and she's sending out a general distress call and everything's falling apart. You get that moment, and it's word for word, and it's really well done. So this concept of the multiverse has sort of always been part of Babylon 5's DNA, which, again, they were doing it before. That was a poison well, so I accept it. But some of the changes with the shadows, I thought felt out of character for what was either implicitly or explicitly stated about them. But again, minor quibble, certainly in comparison to my concerns around, you know, kind of the character of Jakar. Let's see, what else do we have that was kind of weird in this? I don't really have any other major, like I said, the music was great. The look of the whole thing was awesome. I thought the writing was just on the nose, very human. You know, the joke about Sheridan socks and everything was great. You know, I didn't have a problem with any of that. Now, as the story progresses, and this is something I didn't really notice until I listened to the audio commentary, probably would have caught on after, you know, fifth or sixth or seventh time of watching it. As the story progresses, you know, Sheridan is, he's the observer in this. And so, you know, these multiverses don't exactly exist without him seeing them in a way. Like it's, I'm not going to say it's confusing. It's just it's purposely vague. So it's not confusing. It's just purposely vague. What starts to happen though, and it gets described, I mean, by the Zathris, was it Zathris or was it Zathris? I think Zathris was the one who said that, you know, like these other timelines, these other universes are becoming more real as he keeps jumping, and it, you know, it's going to create a problem. But anyway, what ends up happening is he starts spending more time in these other universes and these alternate universes. But not only does Sheridan spend more time, but when he jumps to another one, we, the audience, start spending more time after the fact within the universe that Sheridan was just in. And it gets to the point where at the end, when he ends up in the universe where he meets a younger version of himself, and he ends up in a universe where they never encountered the shadows, they never went to Zahadum, because IPX had shut down 10 years previous or something. But I think he's in the year 2260 at that point. Or is it 2258? Anyway, after Sheridan had been running the show for a couple of years, or had been running Babylon 5 for a couple of years, the movie actually, so it gets to the point where Delenn brings Sheridan back. And so you get to have all the events that we know happen in Sleeping in Light and Legend of the Rangers and Call to Arms and all, you know, all that stuff that happened after the fact, but you end, including Crusade, but you end up in a universe and the movie stays in an alternate universe at the end. In alternate universe, like I said, where there are, the shadows haven't been discovered. Delenn has also not morphed into the hybrid Delenn, you know, with hair and everything. So she still has, you know, the bone and bald. And there does not appear to be a tally winners whatsoever. Lita's there. And as it stays in this universe, when you listen to the audio commentary, Straczynski heavily implies that more stories could be told in this alternate universe where there is, where there has not been a shadow war. The shadows haven't even been discovered. But you have all of the, you know, you have pretty much all the original characters. You have, you know, Sheridan running the station. Sinclair and Lockley are both there, and we don't know what their roles are because Ivanova is also on the bridge or on the CNC. Garibaldi's there. You know, Lanier's there. Lita Alexander's there. Jakar and of course Londo are there. Like, all these characters are there. There's no Rangers around. Don't see any Rangers. Interesting, or at least I didn't see any. And if the implication in that is that future movies, if the Road Home does well, that if future movies could actually take place in this alternate universe, akin to what I was saying earlier about the Kelvin timeline with Star Trek, I'm actually down with this for quite a few reasons. You know, one is that we actually have Bruce Boxleitner, who still sounds tremendous as Sheridan. I hope we get a lot more Peter Jurassic. We did not get enough Londo in this film. I'm not going to make it a negative, but boy, do I wish we had more. There's really a lot. I think there's a lot of fun that could be had in this. And again, it is set up as to where it's still respecting the continuity as it stands. And you could still probably have moments where, because of Zathras, the Great Machine, or whatever else, where you could have other versions of characters, say from the main timeline of Babylon 5, show up there as themselves. And it's not really a remake, right? Because you're getting the same characters, and you're still going to have some of, at least, the same history. Obviously, history's a little bit different, like with IPX being gone for so long, you know, interplanetary expeditions. But I think that'd be pretty cool. Like, I would, you know, if you're good, if Straczynski wants a blank slate to do Babylon 5 with, for me, this is the way to do it. Do it animated, because one of the great things about this was Straczynski said Warner Brothers told him, you do whatever the fuck you want. He had complete creative control. Awesome. Okay. And if that's because it's animated and there's less money on the line, then do it that way, for fuck's sake. So the idea, yeah, that we would be in another universe for all this stuff, I'm signed up for that, and I would watch the fuck out of that. As far as any other, so overall, you know, if I'm going to give this an out of 10, honestly, I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10, and I'm really only taking a point off because I wasn't so enthused by the presentation of Jakar, but everybody else was really on it. You know, and even like Claudia Christian sounded badass. Patricia Tallman sounded badass. You know, like that was working. I mean, these are some of the original in science fiction television, particularly, you know, because everybody talks about, oh, finally, we have great female characters in science fiction television. Fuck you. We've had great, you know, we've had great female characters in science fiction for 60 years. Okay. Don't shit on Nichelle Nichols. But really, like, these are some of the, you could argue, OG great, female characters, you know, I would not just in science fiction, but they're there and it, you know, we're going to get more of that, get more of, I mean, I'd love to see what they do with the Vorlons. What do the Vorlons mean without the shadows? What does the Psi-Corps mean without the shadows? That was one of the things I wish Bester was in this. You know, like, I did miss the Psi-Corps. The Psi-Corps is one of my favorite elements of Babylon 5. It was kind of weird to not have it, but you can only put in so much. I hope that gets explored more, you know, if this ends up becoming more of a thing. If we could get a weekly animated TV series or something, or however that takes shape in the streaming world, I'd be totally on board for that as well. Overall, I was incredibly impressed with this. And that it really felt like Babylon 5 never skipped a beat. Babylon 5 never really went away. And this just picks up, you know, in many ways, right from where it left off. I was really pleased. I mean, what more could I really ask for considering the circumstances, right? You know, with so much of the original cast gone, among other things, I thought this was tremendous writing. It was funny. The presentation overall was great. I mean, I could quibble on little things and maybe one big thing, like I said, with Jakar, but overall, this is dynamite work. You know, if you're a Babylon 5 fan, you're in for a real treat. The one thing I'll say, or another thing that I'll say quickly, is this movie clearly was walking a tightrope in appeasing classic Babylon 5 fans and bringing in new people. I don't know if this is going to hook. I don't know if this would hook and bring in new people. I don't know if it would make sense to new people. That's a tough line to walk. And it's such a tough line to walk, I don't know that I'd even really try. You know, it's one thing for Ahsoka to like try and introduce new audiences to events and characters from Star Wars Rebels, which also had a 5-year storyline, by the way, or well, no, 4 years, but anyway, it's comparable, I guess. But you know, like with Star Wars, everybody, you know, Star Wars is such a cultural meme that you know so much of the universe. I think you can get away with that quickly. With Babylon 5, there's so much there that I think it's really tough to introduce anybody into it new. And it's really one of the, I don't want to say it's not a problem with Babylon 5. It's really a problem with culture, with civilization, frankly, that people usually don't have the patience to stick with something, to stick with a slow burn. Babylon 5 is a slow burn, but when it gets hot, it gets white hot. And so I don't know. And this has been a mystery, I think, for myself and for a lot of Babylon 5 fans, is how do you really introduce people to Babylon 5 other than you have to tell them, look, you've just got to ride that first and half of seconds of the second season out. You just got to ride it. I know it's a lot of hours. I know it's an investment, but you just got to trust me that by the time you get to season 3, your jaw's going to be on the floor. You got to trust me. And that's the only thing you can do. You can't really like explain it ahead of time because you also don't want to give anything away. So I don't know if there's a point to ever even trying to get new people into Babylon 5. You know, I think you would have to do like a fully separate kind of war story to really get people into it. Maybe though, this is just the build up to where you do get a new universe where a lot of things can be reintroduced and then you can bring in a new audience, even though it's connected ultimately to an old universe, just like the Kelvin timeline is connected to the Prime timeline for Star Trek. Maybe that's the route to go, and this was just the bridge that was necessary to make. And if that was the goal, then I think it worked. I think it succeeded. It worked for me, and I'm a harsh critic. But again, it delivered. So 9 out of 10 for me with this. Again, if they had nailed Jakar, it would have been an easy 10 out of 10. Easy 10 out of 10. Just like just about everything related to Babylon 5, frankly. And boy, if you've never read the novels or gotten your hands, and I mean particularly the trilogies, not necessarily the, I mean, because there's novels that aren't really canon, but particularly the trilogies, you know, like the Fall of Centauri Prime, some of the other, well, anyway, Legion of Fire, check them out. Okay. You can read up about it. Go check them out. If you've never read any of the extraneous material, you are in for an absolute treat if you're a fan of Babylon 5. Yeah. So I'm just hoping for more. That's all I can say. Am I asking you to go out and buy this movie? Yeah, I guess I am. Even if it's just for me, do it for the Gipper, do it for the Sovereign. But I think it's worth it. I wouldn't say it's an introduction to Babylon 5, like I said, but like I've told you for over a decade, put the time into this show. I guarantee you it'll pay off in the end. You might think there's rough patches, but it's going to pay off in the end. And then this movie will have some real meaning for you. And hopefully, again, hopefully we get a lot more of this. This is the thing. Like I said, I thought this is impossible. I didn't think we'd ever get more classic Babylon 5, but here it is. Here we are. And what a great ride. So check it out. Babylon 5, The Road Home, really fresh. I mean, again, just came out not even a month ago. And well, here's hoping that we get so much more of that, especially while the remake for Babylon 5. The news around that, it seems to be in some degree of hiatus, development hell, something along those lines. Straczynski tries to give updates on it, but, you know, you can only say so much. Hasn't been canned anyway, but we still don't have it for, you know, reasons around network acquisitions and all kinds of stuff. But regardless, honestly, like I said, I hope that never happens. I'll just take animated movies the rest of my life. That's fine with me. So I'm going to end this with that. More Sovereign Tech to come, and I will see all of you on the other side.